Special report, coronavirus update. The coronavirus continues to spread across the U.S., killing nearly 20,000. Correspondent Caitlin Collins reports President Trump has said it will be up to him when the country will reopen.
Well, the president said today he has the authority over whether or not states and country largely reopens. We know it's going to be up to governors, but they are also going to be seeking guidance from the federal government on what they think the best practices could be, just like they were on these social distancing guidelines.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, said we should not be pulling back on guidelines, and added that therapeutic drugs take time.
As the weeks and months, and it'll probably be months, sometime in the summer, we'll start to see which are working, which are not, and to focus on those that are we developing and will working.
The global death toll from the coronavirus has surpassed 100,000. I'm Barton Eckert. As Americans are trying to stay busy at home during the coronavirus crisis, scammers are also busy pretending to be from the Social Security Administration. Correspondent Christopher Cruz tells us how you can protect yourself.
The Social Security Administration will never call to threaten your benefits or tell you to wire money, send cash, or put money on gift cards. Anyone who tells you to do those things is a scammer every time. If you're getting these calls, chances are your friends and family are too. Talk with them about it. People who know about scams are much less likely to fall for them. So by discussing them, you're helping protect the people you care for and people in your community. I'm Christopher Cruz.
In a controversial step, South Korea's government says it will strap electronic wristbands on people who defy self-quarantine orders as it tightens monitoring to slow the spread of the coronavirus. I'm Barton Eckert.
Please listen. This is important. Anyone can be affected by the prescription opioid crisis. If you think you've been hurt by Purdue or its prescription opioids like OxyContin, you may be entitled to compensation as part of Purdue's bankruptcy, but you have to file a claim. Claims may include overdose, death, substance use disorder, lost wages, and neonatal abstinence syndrome. A confidential claim can be filed by individuals, a legal guardian, by survivors or relatives of people who have died or are disabled. The deadline to file a claim is June 30th, 2020, or you will lose your right to file a claim. For more information, visit PurduePharmaClaims.com, or you can call toll-free 1-844-217-0912. That's 1-844-217-0912. Paid for by Prime Clerk, LLC.
Perhaps no artistic medium responds more immediately or evocatively to social change than music. More from David Daniel.
Islands in the sea, that is what we are.
A Kenny Rogers tribute recorded in social isolation. Lady Antebellum paid homage to Rogers, who died March 20th, with this Islands in the Stream cover for a CMT special honoring Rogers and raising money for COVID-19 relief. You'll find the video on CMT's YouTube page, along with a donation link. In Hollywood, I'm David Daniel.
It's an effort to cope with the stress of living in the COVID-19 age, and you can say it's literally a howling success. Each evening at 8, people scattered around the country have gotten into the habit to step out from their homes and howl. The howls are to thank healthcare workers and first responders trying to stem the tide of coronavirus. I'm Barton Eckert.
Please listen. This is important. Anyone can be affected by the prescription opioid crisis. If you think you've been hurt by Purdue or its prescription opioids like OxyContin, you may be entitled to compensation as part of Purdue's bankruptcy, but you have to file a claim. Claims may include overdose, death, substance use disorder, lost wages, and neonatal abstinence syndrome. A confidential claim can be filed by individuals, a legal guardian, by survivors or relatives of people who have died or are disabled. The deadline to file a claim is June 30th, 2020, or you will lose your right to file a claim. For more information, visit PurduePharmaClaims.com, or you can call toll-free 1-844-217-0912. That's 1-844-217-0912. Paid for by Prime Clerk, LLC.
WML traffic, I'm Michelle Murray. Problems on the Beltway outer loop at Route 50 with an accident along the three left lanes. Do watch out for that and stay to your right. Also, there is an accident on Georgia Avenue northbound at Seminary Road. One left lane getting by that crash. And in Rockville, there's a problem on Falls Road. The southbound lanes are closed at Tuckerman Lane, and that due to a pole and wires down in the roadway. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
The U.S. Supreme Court was established on the principles of fairness, dignity, and impartiality. But it's really a mess. I'm Leon Nafok, and I want to tell you about a new show I'm working on called 5-4.
Nine justices that compose the Supreme Court are not the smartest people in the country.
No.
We are.
That's right.
Every week, Peter, Rhiannon, and Michael are going to take on a legally dubious Supreme Court decision. Listen and subscribe to 5-4, free wherever you get your podcasts, from the Westwood One Podcast Network, where the conversation starts.
Please listen. This is important. Anyone can be affected by the prescription opioid crisis. If you think you've been hurt by Purdue or its prescription opioids like OxyContin, you may be entitled to compensation as part of Purdue's bankruptcy, but you have to file a claim. Claims may include overdose, death, substance use disorder, lost wages, and neonatal abstinence syndrome. A confidential claim can be filed by individuals, a legal guardian, by survivors or relatives of people who have died or are disabled. The deadline to file a claim is June 30th, 2020, or you will lose your right to file a claim. For more information, visit PurduePharmaClaims.com, or you can call toll-free 1-844-217-0912. That's 1-844-217-0912. Paid for by Prime Clerk, LLC.
The coronavirus is wreaking havoc here in the United States and across the globe. The stock market is plummeting. Sports leagues are suspending their seasons. Schools are sending students home, and the entire U.S. economy has been destabilized. Many experts say this is just the beginning. This is a devastating risk if you're heavy in stocks with no safeguard. Wise investors know to hedge against stock market collapse by utilizing physical precious metals. Noble Gold is a leader in this conservative financial strategy, offering extensive education, patient counsel, and expert guidance by phone. We've helped many first-time investors move their IRAs into gold using our easy three-step process. There is no time to waste. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com to get your free gold investment guide. NobleGoldInvestments.com. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Now, the Saturday Morning Update.
105.9 FM, WMAL.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, Jeff Wolf behind the console, Jane Houghton, and our producer this morning, and we want to wish you a very happy Easter and happy Passover weekend. It is good to have you along with us for the holiday. And obviously, a lot to cover today. The president holding a lengthy press briefing with the coronavirus task force yesterday. We'll have some of the highlights of that for you this morning. And the president also with an Easter message yesterday, which we will also play some of that for you as well this morning. We do have a lot to cover. And we're going to be talking with Dr. Bob Lajita once again. He's at St. Joseph University Hospital. That's in Paterson, New Jersey. And we've had him on for the last 3 weeks and kind of been keeping tabs on how things are going in the New York area from his perspective as the director of medicine at the hospital. And we're going to get some very interesting information on testing and some of the medicine that is being used to treat the coronavirus that comes up within the hour. Jennifer Harper will join us with some perspectives on the media and the American public and their reactions to the coronavirus. Cheryl Atkinson will join us coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, and we'll chat with Sharon about some of the work that's going on at Fort Detrick in their virology department. She's been speaking with the doctors there. Also on the way, we'll talk with John Gizzi. Of course, Bernie Sanders dropping out of the race. Joe Biden looking at vice presidential candidates this weekend. We'll talk with John about that. We'll talk with John about the coronavirus task force, their latest efforts at the White House, and also the controversy over the World Health Organization. John Gizzi's got perspective on that. And you may have heard that the Democrats are very interested in incorporating mail-in ballots in the general election in November. The Republicans are opposed to it. We'll get to that with John Gizzi as well this morning. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will be joining us also, and we'll talk with Tony about some of the developments on the justice front, including remarks from the Attorney General, William Barr, this week. He's had an update on the investigations, John Durham's investigation, where that is headed on FISA abuse. We'll talk with Tony about that. And KT McFarland will be joining us as well this morning. We'll get her perspectives on the administration, the way the president tackles these issues, the way he is working collectively with his task force members, the business community, political leaders, Democratic governors around the country. Of course, KT is the former deputy national security advisor at the White House, intimately familiar with the president's style of operation. So we'll talk with KT about that this morning and also get her perspectives on the World Health Organization and some of the other relationships that we have similar to that around the globe, where the U.S. dollars go in, but often disproportionately, and questionable results with that investment. So those are just some of the things we will catch on this morning's Saturday morning update. And yesterday at the White House, the president, first off in the Oval Office, spoke of Easter. And this was a message that he had for the American people.
I ask all Americans to pray that God will heal our nation, to bring comfort to those who are grieving, to give strength to the doctors, nurses, and healthcare workers, to restore health to the sick, and to renew the hope in every person who is suffering. Our nation will come through like never before.
The coronavirus task force briefing, probably one of the longest that I've seen the president conducting yesterday afternoon. It just went on and on and on. And there were a number of questions, obviously, about the next steps, what the president will be doing, and how he's going to be making decisions. And this is the president. He's talking about the decision he has to make. He says it's the biggest decision of his life and how he's going to make that decision. This is President Trump yesterday at the Corona Task Force briefing.
I can listen to 35 people. At the end, I've got to make a decision. I'm going to surround myself with the greatest minds, not only the greatest minds, but the greatest minds in numerous different businesses, including the business of politics and reason. I'm going to have to make a decision, and I only hope to God that it's the right decision. But I would say, without question, it's the biggest decision I've ever had to make.
So that's the president with a very weighty decision that he's going to have to discuss. And we're going to continue with some of the information that we've learned yesterday on the progress against coronavirus. We'll take a quick check of the traffic and weather first. And Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
An accident activity on the Beltway outer loop right at the John Hanson Highway. That is exit 19B for US 50. The three left lanes are blocked with an incident. Now, also, there is a problem right now southbound on Falls Road at Tuckerman Lane. All southbound lanes are closed due to a pole and wires down in the roadway. Also, you'll still need to watch out for accident activity on northbound George Avenue at Seminary Road. One left lane is getting by that crash. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny and warmer on this Saturday. We will have some breezy conditions at times, around 10 to 15 miles per hour, so not nearly as bad. Highs around 60 degrees. Clouds increase late tonight, lows back in the 40s. For your Easter Sunday, mostly cloudy, some isolated showers, a few in the morning, better chance during the evening, highs around 70 degrees. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Leggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Currently in Washington, 41 degrees at WMAL at 6:15.
WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday morning update. It's great to have you with us, and a very happy holiday weekend to you. The coronavirus task force briefing yesterday, again, it was a lengthy session, and Dr. Birx discussed the indicators and what they're seeing in the numbers and the modeling.
As encouraging as they are, we have not reached the peak. And so every day we need to continue to do what we did yesterday and the week before and the week before that, because that's what in the end is going to take us up across the peak and down the other side.
So there's been a lot of questions asked about models, modeling, and the numbers that were expected. There was talk of anywhere between 100 and 240,000 possible deaths from the coronavirus. Now the projections are looking somewhere between 60 and 100,000. And a lot of people asking a lot of questions. And Martha McCallum at Fox asked Dr. Fauci last night about models.
I have been and still am and will always be somewhat reserved and skeptical about models, because models are only as good as the assumptions that you put into the model. And those assumptions that start off when you don't have very much data at all, or the data that you have is uncertain, that you put these assumptions in and you get these wide ranges of calculations of what might happen, you know, 100,000 to 240,000 deaths. But then as you start to accumulate data, data that's real data, are likely being influenced heavily by the mitigation programs that you put in, the physical separations, that when real data comes in, then data, in my mind, always trumps any model. And you have to modify the model and the assumptions as you get data in. So I have no problem with people who are critical of modeling, because modeling is inherently an imperfect science. So I don't really have any quibbling with that. And you just got to make sure as you collect real data, you rely more on the data than you do on a model.
So that's a sense of what was happening at the coronavirus task force meeting yesterday, and also Dr. Fauci last night. And obviously we are all very hopeful that we can get back to relative normalcy as quickly as possible. But one of the things to keep in mind is even though things are looking a little better over this weekend, we cannot get complacent. And Dr. Lahita, who we'll talk with later on this morning, that's one of his very important messages, is that we need to maintain the vigilance, maintain the social distancing, and we can't let up anytime soon. So that is something that's very important from the medical professionals. Now, we mentioned that Attorney General Barr had been quite outspoken this week. And he was talking with Laura Ingraham from Fox News. And one of the big questions is, you know, what was going on? They've been trying to find out about what was going on in these investigations, what was behind the investigations. And Attorney General Barr getting the message across that the Justice Department is continuing to conduct business in spite of the coronavirus situation and people working from home. The Justice Department is moving full speed ahead. And here's what he had to say.
I think the president has every right to be frustrated, because I think what happened to him was one of the greatest travesties in American history. Without any basis, they started this investigation of his campaign. And even more concerning, actually, is what happened after the campaign, a whole pattern of events while he was president. So to sabotage the presidency, and I think that, or at least had the effect of sabotaging the presidency. My own view is that the evidence shows that we're not dealing with just mistakes or sloppiness. There was something far more troubling here, and we're going to get to the bottom of it. And if people broke the law, and we can establish that with the evidence, they will be prosecuted.
So that's Attorney General Barr, and that's a sense of what's been going on at the Justice Department. Now, you've heard talk that there is a plan for yet another stimulus package, and the Democrats are very interested in loading some things into that legislation, including voting by mail. And Nancy Pelosi had some comments about Republicans and how she feels and how they feel.
What they did on the Republican side was they took out some of our positive pieces that we wanted to include. That would be same-day registration, mailing a ballot to every registered voter, initiatives like that that open the process.
So that's Nancy Pelosi and what she's talking about. Well, President Trump views it somewhat differently. Here's what he had to say.
I'm not going to say which party does it, but thousands of votes are gathered and they come in and they're dumped in a location. And then all of a sudden you lose elections if you think you're going to win. I won't stand for it.
All right. So that's President Trump. And that's what he has to say about it. Well, there are some other things going on that we thought we would pass along to you this morning on the Saturday Morning Update. The British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, has been able to go for short walks. His condition continues to improve. Of course, he was transferred from the intensive care unit to a ward in a London hospital, an announcement from the British government on Friday. He's been walking on his own at the St. Thomas Hospital, and that's right across from the Parliament. So that's good news for the British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. Now, here's some good news for you, assuming you have a car. The insurance companies are realizing that people haven't been driving, so there have been many, many fewer accidents. So there are rebates being planned by the insurance companies. And you say, well, that's not such a big deal. I mean, what am I going to get out of it? Well, as an example, State Farm is planning a $2 billion rebate. What that means to you? A 25% credit for the weeks between March 30th and May 31st. Not bad. GEICO will give out about $2.5 billion. GEICO will issue a 15% credit as the policies come up for renewal, a 15% credit for those policies renewing between April 8th and October 7th. There will also be a credit on new policies. Allstate, returning about $600 million. They say that they'll do a 15% credit on their premiums for April and May. USAA says they'll return $520 million to its members, policyholders, to receive a 20% credit on 2 months of premiums. So a little bit of a break, and all the others are jumping into Nationwide, the Hartford, Farmers, Travelers, Hanover, Liberty Mutual. It's widespread in terms of those rebates coming from the insurance companies. So a little bit of good news for us. 6:24 now on the Saturday Morning Update. We're going to change it up a little bit, take a quick break, and then we'll talk with Jennifer Harper from the Washington Times.
Recently, the U.S. Navy delivered tons of food to hungry people halfway around the world.
But you could help someone in your own community simply by donating a can of soup. Last week, a Navy doctor saved the life of a total stranger.
Just like you could, by giving a pint of blood.
Right now, a Navy captain is providing guidance to 5,000 young men and women at sea.
While there's at least one young person in your neighborhood who could use your guidance.
Next month, a team of Navy Seabees will change a child's life by building a school in an impoverished area.
You could do the same, simply by volunteering once a week to read at a school right down the street.
The men and women of America's Navy do some amazing things to make the world a better place. So can you. Whether it's by donating food or simply giving time, right in your own backyard. Brought to you by America's Navy.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. It's Easter weekend, and we wish you a very lovely Easter and Passover weekend. Jennifer Harper joins us from the Washington Times. She writes inside the Beltway. Good morning.
Good morning, and happy holiday weekend, everybody.
I want to start off with something the president said in the coronavirus briefing on Friday afternoon, and that is how the American public has just completely adapted to the stay-at-home orders, and people have accepted it, and abided by, you know, the requests of the administration and the medical community. And it's just amazing, you know, social distancing was not a term we really had in our vocabulary 2 months ago.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the nation gets a round of applause here for actually doing the right thing. I mean, you can't go around this. And it was interesting to note that Ben Carson compared the behavior of America as a nation to the home front of World War II, which I thought was kind of apropos. But with all of that good talk there, this is also being supported in our polls. And we've got some numbers for you that will support the fact that Americans have stepped up and they are doing the right thing. And this is coming from a Rasmussen Report survey. It says overwhelming majorities of Americans in nearly every demographic category say they are personally following social distancing guidelines. It found that 90% of the respondents are following all of those guidelines and also, you know, avoiding contact in groups and so forth and so on. Not so many doing the mask and the gloves thing. About two-thirds of people say they're doing that now. But let's move down really quickly to a CNN poll. How about that? They said 94% of U.S. adults say they understand the guidelines of social distancing, and they feel also that the people in their own communities are abiding by them and understanding the guidelines. And interestingly enough, 71% also said they are prepared if they or a family member contract the virus, and 70% right now feel confident that they could get necessary medical care if they do, unfortunately, contract the virus. So, as you said, Americans are stepping up to the plate, and the polls are supporting that.
You know, there have been some stories about where the virus came from, and a lot of things circulating on the Internet. You've got a story on one of them.
Yes. Well, this is kind of a shorty for us. Again, I've got some numbers for you. Sorry about that this early in the morning. But there is a poll out there that bothered to ask people, where did the coronavirus come from? What is the pedigree of the coronavirus? It's a very alarming topic, but a notable portion of the public, particularly among conservative Republicans, they believe that the virus emerged from a laboratory rather than nature. All right. Well, 3 out of 10 Americans, of all Americans, say that it was most likely created in a lab. This is according to the Pew Research Center, and they asked close to 9,000 people this question, so it's a significant poll. And to break that down, a quarter of adults, 23%, say that it's most likely that the current strain of coronavirus was developed intentionally in a lab, and another 6% said it was made accidentally. That's kind of hair-raising as well. And a quarter of Americans just say they don't know where it came from. And, of course, there's a big partisan divide here. 37% of Republicans say the virus came from a lab compared to 21% of Democrats. And the Pew Research folks say that among conservative Republicans, 39%, that's about 4 out of 10, say the coronavirus came out of a lab, and they are the largest share of any ideological group. That's what the poll said. But people are thinking about that a little bit.
We've obviously seen the social cost and the health cost and the death tolls, but there is a cost to the economy, and it's also affected a lot of people's wealth. Us average folks ain't the only ones that are getting hit here.
Oh, that's right. Everybody's afraid to look at their 401, no matter how much they have. And Forbes magazine has done a huge analysis of this, and here's what they say. The richest people on earth are not immune to the coronavirus. As the pandemic has tightened its grip on Europe and America, global equity markets have imploded, tanking many fortunes. And if you're wondering, everybody, how many billionaires there are on the planet, well, there are 2,095 billionaires on the planet, and the most live in the United States. So that's kind of why we're paying attention to this. And the collective wealth of the world's billionaires is now $8 trillion. But that's down $700 billion from 2019, Forbes is reporting. And on the hit parade there of billionaires, we've got the most in the top 10. Number one, Jeff Bezos is the world's wealthiest person. He's got $113 billion, followed by Bill Gates at second place, $98 billion. Bernard Arnault, he is a French luxury good tycoon. He has $92 billion. And Berkshire Hathaway tycoon Warren Buffett is fourth with $76.3 billion. And if you're wondering, President Trump ranks number 1,142nd on the lengthy list here. He's got $2.1 billion. But anyway, here we go again with the billionaires getting hit. Altogether, Forbes says 267 people who made last year's list have dropped off as their businesses have faltered. Among the most notable drop-offs is Adam Neumann of WeWork. Another 21 people passed away. And still, Forbes found 178 newcomers hailing from 20 countries, including some like Zoom Video Communications founder Eric Yuan and some other folks. But anyway, their point is even the billionaires can't get away from it.
We're going to take a break for the news, and then we will continue our conversation with Jennifer Harper from the Washington Times. We'll also be talking with Dr. Bob Lahita at St. Joseph University Hospital in Paterson, New Jersey, right across the Hudson from New York City. Governor Andrew Cuomo has reported that coronavirus deaths in New York jumped by 777 in one day. Meanwhile, the number of people hospitalized is growing far less than last week, and that's the possible sign that the outbreak in New York is peaking. New York State is getting help from Google to overhaul a decades-old unemployment benefits system that has left laid-off workers frustrated and awaiting help. Governor Cuomo says the State Department of Labor's system has crashed because of a record-shattering surge in claims and outbreak-related layoffs. The global death toll from the coronavirus has surpassed 100,000. More than half the U.S. deaths have been clustered in the three-state metro area of New York City, New Jersey, and Connecticut, and on Long Island as well, seeing some of the worst outbreaks in the country. It comes even as public health authorities are expressing optimism that pace of infections appears to be slowing. The Trump administration and congressional leaders are poised to launch new bipartisan talks on a fresh coronavirus aid package with hopes for action as soon as next week. Top Senate Democrat Chuck Schumer says he spoke Friday to the Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, and the Trump administration has agreed to pursue bipartisan negotiations on an interim bill to replenish a $350 billion paycheck protection program for businesses. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi also spoke to Mnuchin and encouraged negotiations to break the logjam. The Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell acknowledged this week that talks will need to resume. Developments coming a day after Democrats stifled an attempt by McConnell to rush a $250 billion infusion into the new program. The Trump administration is proposing that a big chunk of the federal aid designed to cover airline payrolls this year will be loans and not cash. Airlines were expecting to share $25 billion in cash grants that Congress approved to help them keep the employees on the job for the next 6 months, but Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin wants the airlines to pay back some of that money. Airlines say they need the cash to avoid massive layoffs. Time for a check of the traffic and weather, and Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
The accident on the outer loop of the Beltway at the John Hanson Highway has been moved to the shoulder. All of your lanes are open and no delays through that incident scene. On Georgia Avenue, northbound at Seminary Road, that accident just cleared away and looks like traffic is now back at speed. Now keep in mind, though, in Rockville on Falls Road southbound at Tuckerman Lane, all southbound lanes are closed with the pole and wires down in the roadway. You want to avoid that area. On 270, no incidents reported. Just watch out for a work zone northbound between 121 and the truck scales in the left lane. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny, less wind today. We'll still have some breezes at times, around 10 to 15 miles per hour. High temperatures today, around 60 degrees. Lows tonight, back in the 40s. With increasing clouds late, we're talking by early tomorrow morning. For your Easter Sunday, mostly cloudy skies, isolated showers early on. I think a better chance during the evening. Highs around 70 degrees, so warmer. Overall, a nice end of the weekend. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 40 degrees in the nation's capital at 635.
Please listen. This is important. Anyone can be affected by the prescription opioid crisis. If you think you've been hurt by Purdue or its prescription opioids like OxyContin, you may be entitled to compensation as part of Purdue's bankruptcy, but you have to file a claim. Claims may include overdose, death, substance use disorder, lost wages, and neonatal abstinence syndrome. Confidential claim can be filed by individuals, a legal guardian, by survivors or relatives of people who have died or are disabled. The deadline to file a claim is June 30th, 2020, or you will lose your right to file a claim. For more information, visit PurduePharmaClaims.com, or you can call toll-free 1-844-217-0912. That's 1-844-217-0912. Paid for by Prime Clerk, LLC.
There are times when our need to connect really matters. To keep customers and employees in the know. To keep business moving. Comcast Business is prepared for times like these. Powered by the nation's largest gig speed network. To help give you the speed, reliability, and security you need. Delivering the tools that let you manage your business from any device, anywhere. Plus voice solutions for any size business, including remote call forwarding and readable voicemail. And with Comcast Business, you have the support of experts here for you 24/7, all drawing from extensive experience in preparing for a wide variety of situations and backed by a network that has the capacity to ensure that work gets done. Comcast Business believes in the power of working together, which is why when every connection counts, you can count on us. To learn more, go to comcastbusiness.com/response.
Those serving in our military, they're the difference makers. Separated from family, enduring hardships far from home, sacrificing for their country. Well, for those of us who support our armed forces through the USO, we get to make a difference too. Through the USO, we get to be the force behind the forces, connecting them to every comfort of family, home, and country possible. It's a good feeling to make a difference. Visit uso.org/force to learn how you can be the force behind the forces.
Let's talk about America. Not taxes or tweets or the issues that divide us, but how incredible our country is. Whether you come home to a crowded city street or sleepy small town, everyone deserves to live in a clean, green, and thriving community. We are Keep America Beautiful, the nonprofit working with millions of people like you to end littering, improve recycling, and beautify communities. Learn more at KAB.org. Together, we can do beautiful things.
The Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. We're talking with Jennifer Harper. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. So the Friday afternoon Corona Task Force press briefing went on forever. And, you know, the president's been working long hours, had a lot of meetings, a lot of phone calls. Doesn't really show much sign of tiring.
You're 100% right here. Because, you know, a lot of his fans, a lot of President Trump's fans, they often marvel at the fact that he's very steadfast presence during all these briefings. And as a crisis is raging in his own nation and around the world, and you know, President Trump's fans, they marvel at his stamina over the years, and this has never backed off during all the hostile attacks by the news media and his Democratic foes and all the continual partisan pushback against the president, even during this pandemic. Oh, brother, well, that's another story. But we have one very close observer here that is suggesting the president is doing very well during all of this, and here we go. This is from Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson. He says the people who criticize him, they're going to criticize him no matter what he does. So he kind of puts that aside. It invigorates him. If they really wanted him to go away, they'd stop criticizing. But they're never going to do that, so it works out just fine. And apparently, you know, Mr. Carson has watched Mr. Trump do all this for quite some time, and I think he's got lots and lots of years of completely ignoring all of that. And, you know, when you look back on his history, Mr. Trump has underscored his ideas, like in books like The Art of the Deal. You know, he wrote that book in 1987, and the book has been reprinted several times. And you have to look at, I looked up an old review from the New York Times about that book and the way Mr. Trump does his business and conducts his public affairs. Trump makes one believe for a moment in the American dream again. Believe it or not, that came from the New York Times. But back to Ben Carson again. He says, you know, the criticisms are going to keep on going, but Mr. Trump puts it aside, and it invigorates him. That is what Dr. Carson is saying about President Trump. And also, as I mentioned before, Dr. Carson also praises the American public. He said, it's just like the spirit that we saw back in World War II about all the self-confining that people are doing, where people are bonding together and recognizing that this is not a time for a lot of political argument. So interesting commentary from the good doctor.
Easter Sunday tomorrow, and people will be going to church via their laptops and their televisions.
Oh, yes, indeed. There's a lot of that going to be going on, and some folks have really stepped up to the plate here, and I will cite Evangelist Franklin Graham on this one. He is going to have a special Easter message, and where he is delivering this from is of note. He will be delivering this from the Emergency Field Hospital that's in the middle of New York City's Central Park, and that was actually donated by Samaritan's Purse. That's the charity that he is associated with. He says, because our nation and the world are in crisis, I want to share a message of the unshakable hope found only in Jesus Christ this Sunday. That's, again, according to Franklin Graham. And he is going to be delivering his message on Fox News. So Fox News itself has a whole series of things running from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. On Easter, and it's called America Together, Keeping the Faith. So that's something you can keep your eye on. And there's lots more, lots of live stream services from St. Peter's Basilica at the Vatican, First Baptist Church in Dallas, the National Cathedral right here in D.C.
So that's tomorrow. If people have time on their hands today, can we leave them with another one of your interesting diversionary websites?
Yes, indeed. We got a diversion du jour for you as the quarantine weeks roll on. This is sort of an unusual one. It's from the Society of Architectural Historians and also the University of Virginia Press. They have a very active website which chronicles all 20,000 interesting American structures, monuments, landscapes, and other noteworthy spots. They have this organized by location, architect, building materials, style, and a bunch of other factors. If you like old buildings, this is a place for you. You can find it at sah-archipedia, archipedia.org.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Have a wonderful holiday weekend.
Thank you. Happy Easter, everybody.
It is 6:44. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. It's really nice to have you with us on a holiday weekend. And we did speak with Dr. Bob Lahida late yesterday. He's at St. Joseph University Hospital in Paterson, New Jersey. It's right across the river from New York. And we're going to talk with him next. Some very, very interesting information on the progress they're making there, progress on medications, progress on testing. So a lot of good information coming up next. But first, we're going to check in with Michelle Murray in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia on 66 westbound at business 234, but before the Prince William Parkway, there is an accident, and that is blocking the left lane. Stay to your right and use caution there. The earlier accident on Georgia Avenue, northbound at Seminary Road, that has been cleared. But keep in mind, in Rockville, southbound Falls Road is still closed at Tuckerman Lane due to the pollen wires down in the roadway. On 270 southbound near 124, there is a construction zone along the left side of the roadway. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny, less wind today. We'll still have some breezes at times, around 10 to 15 miles per hour. High temperatures today, around 60 degrees. Lows tonight back in the 40s. With increasing clouds late, we're talking by early tomorrow morning. For your Easter Sunday, mostly cloudy skies, isolated showers early on. I think a better chance during the evening. Highs around 70 degrees, so warmer. Overall, a nice end of the weekend. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 40 degrees. It's 6:45 on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler, and it is great this week once again to be joined by Dr. Bob Lahida. He's professor of medicine at New York Medical College and chairman of medicine at St. Joseph University Hospital. That's in Paterson, New Jersey, right across the Hudson River from Manhattan. And Dr. Lahida, thank you for being back with us this week.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
Can you contrast your situation this week versus a week ago when we spoke, in terms of new admissions and, in general, the control of the disease?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Frankly, I expected this past week to be horrific, and it was. The number of deaths seemed to increase, but these were people who were hospitalized and then became critical. What we did was see the light at the end of the tunnel, and I met with my staff, and we said, wow, you know, the number of holds in the emergency room seem to be lessening. We needed ventilators, obviously, and we used them. We got six more, and we had 35 delivered last night. And we're looking at not possibly needing them all now. The people we're seeing that are becoming clinically well are being discharged promptly. These are people in the hospital that were either extubated or did not have to be intubated, and those who are critically ill are critically ill. And those numbers, although they did increase this week, I expect to start dropping next week. Now, when I say that, it's hopeful optimism. I really don't know what is going to happen, but I can tell you that with my staff having a number of people that are infected now and quarantined, I have put on extra doctors in Department of Medicine. I have now seven teams that are just working floors that are COVID positive. We have cohorted the COVID negative patients in a separate part of the hospital. But I'll tell you, we were going to open another hospital, what we call a pop-up hospital, in the anticipation of having several thousand more cases. And we have held off on that right now because of the complexity of doing that. So and the fact that there's probably not going to be a need for that. So all of those things to me as a physician on the front line is very hopeful. And God willing, I can remain non-infected. I should say that. All of us pray every day. We wake up and say, gosh, you know, no fever, no aches, no pains, no cough, no shortness of breath. And believe me, it's a day-to-day deal with all of us. And so we're just hoping things start to be mitigated completely. In other words, the curve gets flat.
Governor Cuomo's press conference on Friday reporting that the daily death toll had actually dropped slightly overnight and that the number of infections in New York has gone down slightly. And how should we interpret that in terms of, I think everybody's got cabin fever, itching to get out of the house, itching maybe to relax some of these standards we've been maintaining. What would you say to somebody that might start to feel like we can maybe relax a little bit?
No, I'll tell them, look, mitigation. First, we had suppression, and that worked minimally. But suppression doesn't work. It's usually like a second phase. The first phase is mitigation. And mitigation means stay out of circulation. And particularly on a holiday weekend like this, where, you know, you have Passover Seders, where people get together. You have Easter Sunday. Everybody wants to go to church. Everybody, I've heard people wanting to say, well, we'll stand outside of church, but we'll be 6 feet apart. That's not going to work because, you know, whatever we're doing right now is working. And I am convinced that this is a cyclical infectious agent so that I think as the summer comes on, the numbers will plummet. And that's the time to really come out of the hole in the ground, the mole hole, whatever you want to call it. Everybody's referred to things differently. But you know what? Here's another good news possibility. There's an antibody test that's going to be available for most young people, as well as people in the healthcare professions, to test us to see whether we have had the infection and whether we are immune to it. Now, that's very important because, frankly, I stay away from my wife. I'm 12 feet away from her all the time. You know, we stay in separate parts of the house. But if I knew that she had antibodies and was immune and that I had antibodies and was exposed to it and had it, and believe me, I think I did have it in February. I was dreadfully ill for about 3 days, but I thought it was the flu. If I have antibodies to COVID-19, I'm going to be very happy. And we're going to be able to tell that to thousands and thousands of people because this test, this antibody assay, because of the way the immune system works, we can tell by looking at the different kinds of antibody or immunoglobulin against the antigen and say, wow, I'm a recently infected person, or I was infected 3 months ago, or I wasn't infected at all yet. So I think, Rick, you can see where I'm going.
I've heard conflicting reports that if you recover from COVID-19, you're immune. Are you immune if you recover? Is everybody immune if they recover?
No. Well, I think you can be reinfected, number one. I've seen people wax and wane with the infection. Now, we really don't know. To be honest with you, I'm not going to say that I know because if Tony Fauci hears me on the radio, he's going to say, well, how did he come up with that? But I can say that this disease it vacillates in some people. I had a doctor who was very sick, got better. We thought everything was coming down, and then all of a sudden he got sick again. And so you could say, well, maybe he was reinfected. No, it was probably the natural course of the virus in him and the way his immune system was behaving. But I would say that, yes, you can be reinfected, but if you've been infected once, you're basically vaccinated. You're automatically vaccinated. You have already had a dose of the antigen, which is the virus, and your immune system is responding to that and has made copious amounts of antibody, programmed the cells of your body to say, this virus is abnormal. You've reacted against it. So I think your chances of being reinfected are not likely unless you have some kind of immunodeficiency, which is always possible. But that probably would have killed you on the first go-round rather than let you be reinfected. So that's an important question. Now, another question, Rick, that everybody asked me is, what about a person that has been quiet and has been infected that nobody knows about and is running around shedding the virus? That's a big fear of a lot of people. Well, certainly that's always possible. But in my experience, we have not identified anybody like that yet. I would imagine if you're incubating the virus for a period of 5 to 7 days, you could infect everybody around you and then pop up with symptoms and have full-blown disease. We simply don't know. If it's like influenza, it's probably going to behave that way. So that's the riskiest thing, and that's why I say everybody should stay home. Everybody should wear a mask if you're in a group of more than two people. You should Zoom or Skype your Easter dinner and your Passover Seder.
If you're asymptomatic, within a couple of weeks, you're no longer contagious, or does it stay with you for months?
Well, what we're saying is that if you are asymptomatic and you have had no fever or symptoms for several days being approximately 3 to 5 days, then you can go back to work. And we've done that with a number of our medical staff. We've taken them out of quarantine. They have been quite ill, but they were not ill enough to be hospitalized, but they've been home. They stayed at home for at least 2 weeks with the infection. And then once the fever goes and the cough and the shortness of breath, whatever it is that they manifest, some people only manifest with nausea and vomiting or diarrhea, and they have a fever, they don't have any shortness of breath. This virus is very, very versatile. And we bring them back. We say, okay, you can come back to work. It doesn't mean that you're going to have a negative test. your antibody test may be very, very robust, but the actual PCR of the virus, the symptoms are going to be gone and you're going to be back to work. Now, I presume those people cannot infect others. We're presuming they cannot. The policy right now is asymptomatic for 5 days, come back to work.
Well, you mentioned back to work. The next big debate here in Washington is when we can all go back to work. What would you recommend from what you've seen as kind of a path and the considerations in that decision?
This is a pretty big question. That means we're going to end mitigation. And by ending mitigation, I mean we're going to stop isolating each other. We're not going to wear masks. We're going to go back to work. We're going to go to the supermarket and shop like we always did. Go to the movies and sit with 150 people watching a great movie. We're going to go to a Broadway show here in New York. That's a biggie. I don't think that's going to happen right away. I think we've got to wait until we see this virus become completely, the number of cases drop to almost non-existent. And that may take another 2 months or so. I think there's a big rush to have everybody go back to work. I do think if we have the antibody test, and Guy keeps saying that that's a game changer, that will tell me and tell everybody else that's a physician and a nurse that this person is immune, this person's had the disease, this person can work because the danger of his or her being reinfected is negative. So we can give that test to millions of people, and it will be available to millions of people once the Food and Drug Administration approves it, and I'm sure they're working on it. I understand there are a couple of companies, which I will not mention, who have the test already in hand and are waiting for federal approval. Once that happens and the virus starts to disappear because of climate change, which I think it may happen, as the flu does, if it does follow the pattern of the flu, and there's no reason to think it shouldn't, I think that we then can open the country up again. I think there's hope. There's light at the end of the tunnel, big light.
Well, I know I speak for everyone that's listening to say thank you to everything that you and all of the medical professionals around the country are doing to protect us, to help us to prepare for the future and to eradicate the coronavirus. And the bravery and dedication that you all show 24/7 is just amazing, and we thank you for it.
I just want to say that the doctors are working very hard. We're all working supremely hard in the ICU, and we've set up a number of different ICUs, and this is all the hospitals in New York, and many are in the penumbra around New York City. We have drugs we're using, and I'm going to say it because it has to be said. We're using hydroxychloroquine, and we're using Zithromax. We're being very, very mindful of what happens to the heart rhythm, and we're being very careful, and we've had no bad situations. We have been very much paying attention to clotting problems, blood clotting problems, which become very, very prominent with the severely ill. And so we're using a lot of anticoagulants. We're looking at antiviral drugs like remdesivir. Unfortunately, it's not available to everybody, and other antivirals. And we're looking at even an antiparasitic drug, which was found in animals to completely obliterate the coronavirus. We're giving some patients that. And those are all very exciting developments. Believe me, the best minds of the country have been working on the best therapies for patients, and we're trying to save lives. And in many cases, we are doing remarkable things, even the things that surprised the heck out of me. I just can't get over the fact that many of the older patients that I see that I would expect to die immediately are not dying anymore. So we're doing okay.
Dr. Lajeda, thank you once again for being with us.
Okay, thanks, Rick, for having me.
Dr. Bob Lajeda, and he is at the St. Joseph University Hospital, Paterson, New Jersey, right across from New York City. It is 6:59. We've got the 7 o'clock news coming up with Heather Curtis, back with John Gizzi, Cheryl Atkinson, Tony Schaefer, and K.T. McFarland in the 7 o'clock hour on WMAL.
Please listen. This is important. Anyone can be affected by the prescription opioid crisis. If you think you've been hurt by Purdue or its prescription opioids like OxyContin, you may be entitled to compensation as part of Purdue's bankruptcy, but you have to file a claim. Claims may include overdose, death, substance use disorder, lost wages, and neonatal abstinence syndrome. A confidential claim can be filed by individuals, a legal guardian, by survivors or relatives of people who have died or are disabled. The deadline to file a claim is June 30th, 2020, or you will lose your right to file a claim. For more information, visit PurduePharmaClaims.com, or you can call toll-free 1-844-217-0912. That's 1-844-217-0912. Paid for by Prime Clerk, LLC.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.